Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to Bits About Books. Our guest today is Bob Berg, and we speak with him about his international bestseller, The Go-Giver, a little story about a powerful business idea, which he co-authored with John David Mann.
When you ask the right questions, eventually the prospect is going to tell themselves what they need to hear. That's so brilliant, because we think it's that we are the ones who need to tell them what they need to hear. When we tell them what they need to hear, it's suspect. When they tell themselves what they need to hear, it's gospel.
For more than 30 years, Bob Berg has been successfully showing entrepreneurs, leaders, and sales professionals how to build relationships, communicate their value, and accelerate their business growth. Although for years he was best known for his sales classic, Endless Referrals, it is his business parable, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, that has created a worldwide movement. While part of a four-book series, The Go-Giver itself has sold well over a million copies and been translated into 30 languages. It was rated number 10 on Inc. magazine's list of most motivational books ever written and was on HubSpot's 20 most highly rated sales books of all times. Bob is co-founder of Saleswise Live Sales Mastery, an event for successful entrepreneurs, sales professionals, and leaders from around the world held in West Palm Beach, Florida. He also publishes the very popular Daily Impact email, which you can subscribe to at berg.com. Bob is an advocate, supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. He's also an unapologetic animal fanatic and serves as part of South Florida Rescue, Foster, and Adoption Organization. Now, onto this thoughtful episode with Bob Berg. Bob, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm really thrilled to have you on the show and to talk about The Go-Giver. I think it's a legendary book in its own way. And people have found a lot of, should I say, what was missing potentially in what they did, and they found the connect. So that's my take on the book, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, and I love your take on the book. I appreciate that very much, and it's a delight to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So we'll dive right in. My question is, how did you think that this book has to be written? When did it occur to you first?
Well, many years ago, I had had a book out called Endless Referrals, which yes. was a how-to book on how for written for entrepreneurs and salespeople who yes. knew they had a great product or service. They knew it brought wonderful value to people, but they didn't necessarily feel comfortable with the process of going out into their communities and building the kinds of relationships that would cause people to want to do business with them directly and or through referrals, right? And so I that was the basic premise was that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust.
Absolutely.
That was the first book, but it was a how-to book, and I'd always enjoyed reading parables ever since I'd been in sales. I think parables, which are stories, they connect on a deeper level, a heart-to-heart level. And I always thought, wouldn't it be great if we could take the basic idea of endless referrals, turn it into a parable. And I kind of sat with that for a number of years until I met John David Mann, who was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I was writing for. I was writing a monthly column for them. And John at the time wasn't as well known outside his niche, but those who knew him knew he was brilliant, right? And I got to know him, and he was very kind, and he was a great editor. I knew he was a great writer, and he was always very, you know, humble and always just a great guy. And I thought, this is the person I want to write this with. And I knew he could do a fantastic job of making this come alive. And I asked him if he would be the lead writer / storyteller, right? And he was the only one I wanted to do this with. And fortunately, after thinking about it for a few weeks, he said yes, and we got to work on it. It only took about 3 months to actually write the book. The toughest part was finding our publisher, because our agent got turned down, which means we got turned down by 24 New York publishing houses before the 25th one, Portfolio, an imprint of Penguin Random House, took us on, and they turned out to be the perfect publishing partner. So everything happens for a reason. But over the course of a year, you know, it's like, is anybody going to publish this thing for us? Yeah.
Wonderful. So what? When you decided that you wanted to take this parable route to actually talk about what you did in a how to mode in endless referrals, what was your process? I mean, did you have something in mind that I want this kind of characters, and you spoke with John saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking, or is it something else?
We both, because John was a great entrepreneur too, and he was a great leader before he became a writer. So we basically got together and just we asked ourselves, what is it that sustainably successful people do, and what have they always done, right? Even if they didn't know that's what they were doing, right? Because some people do the right things, but they do them intuitively and don't even know, right, that that's what they're doing. So what are those things they do? Now, John, who'd been a writer for many, many years, had gotten to interview some of the most successful people in the world. I'd been a speaker for many years, and after being in sales myself. So as a speaker, I got to share the platform with some of the most successful people in the world. And both John and I asked a lot of questions of success to successful people. And we compared notes. And of course, we both do a lot of reading ourselves and studying success, reading biographies and autobiographies and everything about success we can get our hands on. And we together came up with those five, what we call the five laws of stratospheric success. But they're nothing new, right? They're all the things that successful people have been doing and do to this day. We just maybe gave them certain names. And of course, with John's amazing writing skills, put it in story form. And really, that's what happened.
Yeah. When I was going through the book, I try not to read it fully, because my questioning changes completely when I've completely read a book. You know, right. then I'm in a critical mode, my journalistic caps turns on, and so on and so forth. So I try not to do that. And I'll come to the book and the laws in a bit. But I'm thinking that when you were planning, again, I'm diving back to the story and the structure and so on. Was there something that inspired you? Okay, we'll do a parable. For instance, you could have taken a completely different route and done a fable kind of route where it would have been animals and stuff like that. So that was a possibility, right? You chose not to do that, but you chose to do it the way you did. Did you at all consider this kind of options while you were doing this?
I don't think we did necessarily consider that. But you make a great point, because you think of it like Who Moved My Cheese, which was a fable, right? It was about the mice and many of these things that, we could have gone that direction. But I think one of the things we were kind of committed to doing was sharing with people how doing things in this way, and we always say the premise of the Go-Giver itself is that shifting your focus, and that really this is where it begins, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value, is not only a more fulfilling way of conducting business, it's the most financially profitable way as well. So I think because of that, we wanted to make it people, you know, we right. wanted to have people doing it and kind of show, yeah, you know, this is how you can do it too. And I think one of the reasons the book had an audience was because there were a lot of people who wanted to feel like, yeah, I can do business this way. I can focus on providing value and I can be successful, not in spite of doing that, but because that's what I'm doing, right?
Right,
which is basically what selling it. You remember Zig Ziglar, right? The great Zig Ziglar, who said, you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want. Well, when you think about it, that's what selling is. That's what business is, because no one's forced to buy from you.
Exactly. Right?
So, you know, I used to say when I spoke at sales conferences, I'd often begin by saying, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. Right? They're not going to buy from you because you need the money or even because you're a nice person.
Yeah.
They're buy from you because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. Well, you know, I think most salespeople, most entrepreneurs, they want to feel as though they're making a difference. They're bringing value to the world around them. And as salespeople, entrepreneurs, we tend to do that through our products and services. That doesn't mean we can't be involved in other things, but in our life, we tend to do that through our, and so this really, I think, kind of hit a nerve with people where they said, yeah, that's what I want to do.
Right. Absolutely. And I think with a lot of technology, I run a technology company, which is in the sales tech stack. The expectation from technology today is that it will do things which you should be doing. And it's good as long as the manual repetitive stuff.
Right.
But technology doesn't build relationship.
Exactly. You know, there's a great book written, it's got to be 7 or 8 years ago, by Jeff Colvin, who is the editor-in-large at Fortune magazine. It was called People Are Underrated. And the premise of his book was that it used to be asked, what can humans do that machines or technology can't do? Okay. And there were answers to that. Okay. But now he said, it's not a point. Now he said, technology can basically do everything that a human can do. The question now becomes, what is it that only humans can do that people will not accept from technology or from machines? And as an example, he said, you know, if God forbid someone loses a loved one and, you know, during an operation in the hospital, they don't want a printout telling them this.
Yeah.
They want a doctor who is kind and empathetic and caring, right? And so what Jeffrey Colvin talked about is the more prolific technology continues to be, and it will be, and the more things that we'll be able to do, and it will, the more those human skills, right? The empathy and teamwork and team building and, you know, being allies and being, you know, working together with people and tact and diplomacy and all the, that's what's going to be even more valuable. And the people who master those skills, those, what I call people skills, right? Some people call them soft skills. I don't think there's anything soft about them. It's people skills. And those are the people who are going to have that kind of, who are going to be paid more, who are always going to have a job, and who are going to be in demand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's so well put. Going back to the parable, these characters that you had, so you had this, you know, protagonist, and then you had this.
Yeah, Joe was the main protege, and then Pindar was his mentor. Yeah,
exactly. So are these characters people you knew, or you just put it together from many people you knew, each of these? how did that happen?
Yeah, different for different characters. So Pindar, the main mentor, he's actually loosely based on a fellow Canadian of yours, from Toronto, though, another province. And that was Bob Proctor, who was a really great man. He was, you know, kind and generous and always lived in abundance, and he was a mentor to so many people. And we pictured Pindar, you know, as looking like him, having the same mannerisms, the same kind of gravelly voice, and, you know, the whole thing. And so, because we both are such admirers of Bob Proctor. So that was Pindar. Joe was sort of all of us. We've all been Joe, right? Or Josephine, yeah. You know. So you know, that was everybody at one point, sometime or another's Joe. Right. You had the realtor who, Deborah Davenport, she was a combination of two entrepreneurs and salespeople that John and I knew, two women who were just really fantastic. And we kind of brought them together to form. Rachel was totally made up. You know, Gus was kind of, there wasn't any one person who was Gus, but he was kind of an amalgam of people we know who were the, you know, the kind, very successful, soft-spoken, but you knew they, you know, they knew everybody and had everybody's respect and so forth. So yeah, that's kind of how we did it.
This process of actually structuring the story, was it a collaborative effort or was it primarily driven by John?
So John drove it. This guy, he was the lead writer. He was the storyteller. But, you know, again, for someone so brilliant, he's so humble, right? Because he always, we took every paragraph, every line, every word, and we went through everything. And, you know, he always was so open to, you know, there was never any eggshells. I never had to worry about, you know, it was just great. And so, so John really is the guy. He would write the scene and, you know, and do that. So, and he's, you know, he has done that with a number of authors. So he's co-authored a series of books with Brandon Webb, who was a former Navy SEAL, Cameron Johnson, a great entrepreneur, Becky Myers, who was a great leader. And I think the great Tom Peters called that book the leadership book of the year or something. So John is just, and you know, and I think I'd mentioned to you, he's also written a series of three murder mysteries. Right. And I don't know how people have minds like that. I wish I did, but we all work with what we've got.
Yeah. So moving on to the book, let's pick up one or two to give people a flavor of what we are doing here.
Sure.
You did mention that these were things that you sort of made up to represent a idea or a thing to do, right?
Yeah, all laws that have been proven through history, but we kind of renamed them and then to kind of defined them in a way that we thought would make sense.
Of course.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
So first of all, what is value, right? And let's take value as it relates to price, because people think they're the same thing, but they're not. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is, right? Value is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to another human being that they will willingly exchange their money for it and be glad they did while you make a very healthy profit?
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it.
So when we start with the law of value,
yeah,
what are we trying to, I mean, what is the core of that, that we are trying to say, okay, if this is where you're starting, start with the law of value.
Exactly. That's the foundational principle. It all begins there. And it simply means that even aside from your fantastic product or service, which has to be of such worth. So first of all, what is value, right? And let's take value as it relates to price, because people think they're the same thing, but they're not. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is, right? Value is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to another human being that they will willingly exchange their money for it and be glad they did while you make a very healthy profit? And so this is key, because what it means is, even aside from the intrinsic value of your product or service, what's the client experience that you provide? And really at every touch point, from when you first meet that person, right, whether it's an inbound or outgoing, or you're met in person or referred, whatever, from that initial introduction through the relationship building process, the follow-up, the follow-through, the sales process, the referral process, how do you make this person feel about themselves at every single touch point? And you combine that with, again, the intrinsic value of your product or service, and this person ends up feeling as though, and rightly feeling, that they received a lot more in value than what they paid for. But of course, you also make a healthy profit in at the same time. In fact, in any free market-based exchange, when I say free market, I simply mean no one's forced to do business with anyone else. In any free market-based exchange, there should always be at least two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because each of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. That's basically the law of value.
Absolutely. And I think it is actually important to internalize it, because especially, I mean, with your background in sales, you know, today, if you're speaking about business to business dealings, mm-hmm. you are not really delivering value to only one person.
Exactly.
You are delivering value to multiple people who have multiple end outcome in focus.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So navigating a complex sale is, you know, you've got to basically be discovering the value that each individual stakeholder sees in this, right?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So instead of one discovery session, you've got a number of discovery sessions. And that means you got to do your research. You got to be able to ask the right questions and listen and really be able to then, you know, advance the sale. But, you know, I guess whether we're talking, you know, business to business, B2B, or business to consumer, B2C, it's always H to H. It's always human to human, right? So yeah, it's always that. But as you said, in a complex sale or an enterprise sale, you've got more stakeholders who have to be able to understand that value.
Yeah. And the other very important point that you made is that both parties have to profit.
Yeah.
Because I'm a large corporation and this guy who is my vendor has something I need, mm-hmm. but I know I can really squeeze the last penny out of him to bring the price down and so on and so forth, has to realize that if he dies, there's nobody to support that great technology that we just bought.
That is true. And that's why, you know, so first of all, one of the things we say when you sell as the seller, okay, when you sell on low price, you're a commodity.
Yes.
When you sell on high value, you're a resource.
Yes.
Now, if everything else is equal, they're going to always go for the vendor with the low price, which is why, as the sales professional, it's up to you to be able to communicate that additional value. Why should they pay more in order to retain your services along with your product and so forth? And because that's important. And of course, you don't communicate value by telling them it's valuable. You do it by asking questions and having them, you know, one of my great friends, Jeff West, and he and I just wrote a sales parable called Streetwise to Saleswise. And what Jeff says is, when you ask the right questions, eventually the prospect is going to tell themselves what they need to hear. That's so brilliant, because we think that we are the ones who need to tell them what they need to hear. When we tell them what they need to hear, it's suspect. When they tell themselves what they need to hear, it's gospel. Right? So we need to ask the right questions to get them to tell themselves what they need to hear. And that's why, you know, you do that, you're a resource, you're a valuable resource.
So I really like the word value, because I think every sales transaction is really a value exchange.
It is. That is exactly
right?
What it is. Sure.
So when I'm giving you a product, you're giving me money.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm giving you the product means nothing unless it is actually delivering those multiple values that people are looking for, right? Mm-hmm. So outcomes are the is the deliverable, which is the value they're receiving.
Right.
And I also tell, when I talk to buyers, I tell them, because buyers are dominant, so there's a different discussion, we'll not go there today. Mm-hmm. I say that you not only pay the vendor, but you're paying the vendor money plus respect plus faith. Because unless you are giving those things, and if you think it's only a money transaction, you are actually losing out on what else you can get from them in the course of the engagement.
Perfect. Boy, that's absolutely perfect. So spot on.
Yeah, because this is such a core, in you know, base kind of idea, the law of value. I mean, which is why I just wanted to bring out these bits.
Yeah, it's funny. It's an economic law and it's a human law, right?
Exactly.
Because it always comes down to that.
Exactly. 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 You put it so well. Absolutely. It's an economic law and a human law. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at it in totality, and you cannot just delineate it. And that's where the things break down.
Yep.
If you just separate them out. Let's talk about the law of influence, because there's a lot of talk about this. Yep. And I'm thinking that potentially some of it is a direct sort of outcome of the previous book, the referral book. I'm imagining, but please correct me if I'm wrong.
So the law of value, which is law number three, this says that the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, when you first hear that, it's rather counterintuitive, right? It sounds even counterproductive. But you think about it. First, the greatest leaders, top influence, most sustainably successful money earning salespeople, this is how they run their lives and they conduct their business. They are always looking for the interest of the other person. But I also want to qualify this by saying that when John and I say, placing other people's interests first, we don't in any way mean that you should be a doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial. Absolutely not at all. This is where we talk about where Joe in the story learned from several of the mentors, what you and I were discussing earlier, the golden rule of sales, which says all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. Well, here's the thing. There's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way of eliciting those kinds of feelings toward you from others than by genuinely moving from that I focus or me focus to that other focus. Looking to make, as Sam, one of the mentors in the story, advised Joe, looking to make your win all about the other person's win. Wow. Because what is that other person interested in? Their win. Right?
Absolutely.
And so that's why, we were saying the most self-interested thing you can do is put your self-interest aside and focus on the interests of the other person. Dale Carnegie in his classic, How to Win Friends and Influence People, what I believe was the underlying premise of his book was that his one line where he said, ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. Yeah. That's what influence is all about. It's focusing on, how does what I'm asking this person to do, how does it align with their goals, with their needs, their wants, their desires, with their values? How does what I'm asking this other person to do, how does it solve a problem for them? How does it move them closer to happiness? And when we ask ourselves these questions thoughtfully, intelligently, genuinely, authentically, not as a way to manipulate another human being into doing our will, but as a way of building everyone in the process, now we've come a lot closer to earning that person's commitment, right? As opposed to trying to depend on some type of compliance, if you will.
Right, right. Being authentic and genuinely interested, these are things which we have sort of moved away from. And again, talking about sales, we are so enamored by our, like you mentioned a bit back, nobody's buying because your quota is not going to get fulfilled. But our driving you know, motivation is my quota.
Yeah, we're human beings, right? You know, human nature, right?
Yeah. And that sort of is sort of coming from also the generation we are in, where we want think instantly. We have no time to build the relationship, right?
Right.
I want to figure out in the discovery call, is Bob going to buy from me this quarter or not? Right. I want to move on. Otherwise, I want to find the next person who is going to. That is such a.
Well, it's counterproductive. it's totally counterproductive to operate that way. You know, it doesn't work consistently. I mean, you know, every so often, can you make a sale like that? Sure.
Yeah.
But you're not going to have a loyal client. You're not going to have a referral source. Yeah, you're probably going to have someone who rescinds the sale afterwards because they felt pressured. It's not sustainably viable.
Absolutely. So let's talk about authenticity, the law of authenticity, because I think it's so well connected to this.
Well, so the law of authenticity says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. Now, so in this part of the story, Deborah, who was the realtor who we talked about earlier, who was based on two people that John and I knew, she had said that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are all very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. But when you do, when you show up as yourself, day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you, sure, but they also feel comfortable with you. And more importantly, they feel safe with you because they know what they're getting. And, you know, consistency, and Dr. Robert Cialdini in his wonderful book, Influence, Psychology of Persuasion, talked about the law of consistency, that, you know, as human beings, we want to be and appear consistent to others, but we pretty much demand consistency in those we're going to trust, right? Because we want to make sense of our world in a world that often doesn't make sense. We have a human need to understand our world in a world that's often very difficult to understand. So when you're consistent, which is a part of authenticity, you know, you're able to establish that trust and you're able to maintain that trust. You know, I really think that these days, and maybe it's social media, I don't know, but it seems as though the word authenticity has almost come to mean no boundaries, just say or do whatever you want and let it all hang out there now because you're authentic. But, you know, I don't think that's necessarily correct. That would be like the person who says, well, I have anger issues and I yell at people a lot. And if I were to act any differently, that wouldn't be authentic of me. Well, that's malarkey. It's simply this person. What it means is this person has an authentic problem. Yeah. That they need to authentically work on in order to become a better, higher, more effective, authentic version of themselves. So we never want people to use the concept of authenticity as an excuse to not grow, but rather use it as impetus to become your highest self. I have a definition of authenticity that I think is very simple. It works for me. I don't know who'd agree with it or who wouldn't, but I define authenticity as simply acting congruently with your values. And I think as long as we do that, we're on the right track.
Yeah. And olden days, we used to call it character. So he's a man of character, or this is a lady of character.
Right.
That's what it meant, because it is, you know, it's so nice that you bring in these words, and like you said, it's the value plus what you are is what authenticity is.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Your values and absolutely. This is wonderful. So I think we're at the last one, and now I'm sort of wondering why we left the law of compensation out, but we'll leave it out because we have already moved sort of
I can do a 1 minute summation if you want.
Okay, that would be great, and then we can sort of talk about receptivity, and I think we would have covered. Yeah.
So the law of compensation says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where the law of value is all about the experience you provided the person, the compensation says, yeah, that's great, but it's not just a matter of providing exceptional value to one person. Your compensation is how many lives do you impact with that value? So when we take exceptional value plus significant reach, that equals very high compensation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It can't be one-off. I can't be one-off generous. I can't be one-off providing value. It has to be a way of life. Every touch
exactly.
has to deliver the value. Exactly. And that's when it sort of multiplies, compounds, as you may say. Let's touch upon the law of receptivity. I know we are very, very close to our time.
No, that's fine. The law of receptivity says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. And here's what this means. It's understanding that, yeah, you breathe out, you also have to breathe in. It's not one or the other. It's both. Yeah. You breathe out carbon dioxide. You breathe in oxygen. You breathe out, which is giving. You breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving are not opposite concepts, even though the world tends to hit us with that very negative anti-prosperity message. It's one or the other, right? No, giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin, and they work in tandem. And so long as your focus is on the giving and you allow the receiving, well, you're going to live in abundance. You're going to live an abundance. And this is why John David Mann and I say that, and John, of course, coined this term, and that is that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning. Focus on the giving. Allow yourself the receiving. Breathe out and breathe in. That's the law of receptivity.
Wonderful. Wonderful. This is a great point to end. But as you know, I'm a journalist. So I have to have another question, which will be the final one. And this may be a stupid question because it may show that I didn't do research, but I hope not.
I'm sure it'll be your
I hope not. No, seriously. Is there a movie on this book?
No, so it's funny. When the book came out, we had a whole bunch of producers, but they were with very small production companies, and they tried to get, you know, funding, and they tried to get main players behind it. And a couple of them looked like it might happen, but it never really did. And after a few years, John and I said, you know, what we're going to do is if someone comes to us who is a major producer and we know that they can take that, then sure, we consider it. Now, John actually wrote a screenplay. So he wrote a movie version of it already in case that ever happens. So if it does, you know, great. We'd welcome it. But, you know, it's not something that we're actively pursuing.
That's food for thought for some folks who are listening to this, and I hope that this gets made into a movie, because I think it'll be a great movie.
Thank you so much.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Bob, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'm hoping that I did a good job of interviewing you, so I can invite you back to talk about your other books.
I thought you did a fantastic job. It was really a joy being with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. Have a wonderful rest of the day, and I thoroughly enjoyed this chat. Thank you so much. I learned a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll speak soon.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.